Have your furry friends recovered from the noise of fireworks over the holiday weekend? Or maybe you're still looking for a dog or cat who slipped away during all the commotion. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Today on our pet show, what it takes to reunite frightened runaway pets with their families, plus the challenges of operating a no-kill shelter and a panel of experts to answer all your questions. Joining me now are University of Cincinnati Professor of Veterinary Technology, Dr. Jennifer Wells, Westerville Veterinary Clinic veterinarian Dr. Denise Johnson, owner of Paws, Look, Listen, Nick Hoff, and Cincinnati Animal Care Senior Manager for Community Engagement, Lisa Kalina. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you've got questions for them, give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. And a reminder, the advice you hear on this show is general in nature and should not substitute for a visit with your vet. Lisa, how busy does the July 4th holiday get for the shelter? Are there just loads more animals because of the fireworks?
So it's not just fireworks, but fireworks definitely makes things a little bit more crazy. It is, you know, the height of our storm season. You know, we had a very, very rainy week before last. We're going into another very rainy week. Lots of storms, thunder and lightning. So absolutely. Historically, July is the highest intake month of the year. So far this month, just this past weekend, we took in 59 dogs alone. That's Friday through Sunday, but only 24 left.
Wow.
So our intake is currently outpacing our outcomes. And obviously, that's a concern. So it's all hands on deck as we monitor, you know, critical capacity levels and do everything we can to engage our community.
So how does it happen? What are some of the instances where pets run away? I mean, what do you hear from people who come back looking for their pets? How does this kind of thing happen?
Sure. It is. It seems to be most often a door not being shut all the way, kids running in and out, especially if you have friends over or, you know, a 4th of July barbecue, a fence not being latched properly, or just a dog just scrambling to get out when it's afraid and doesn't know where else to go.
Mm-hmm. All right, what are some of the things people can do to prevent this, Nick, do you think?
Yeah. So one of the things that I highly suggest for clients and dog owners around this time is, even if you have a fenced-in yard, take your dogs outside on a leash that you're holding, because this way, if an unexpected firework goes off, even in the middle of the day, as is happening, mm-hmm. if your dog is startled, if they try to run to get away from that scary noise, they are going to be attached to you, and that's going to help to prevent them from scrambling and getting concerned. One of my dogs, Gordon, has learned that he can get out of my yard if he so chooses. And so during this time especially, I take extra special precautions with him.
Yeah. Gordon sounds like a smart dog.
Yeah. And then for him, I actually also do have a GPS collar. Just in case he does get out, I can track him down.
Now, is it a good idea at nighttime when you know the fireworks and maybe the thunderstorms and that sort of thing, is it a good idea just to keep your pets inside, Nick, and not let them? Maybe sometimes they hang out in the yard, but you need to just keep them in?
Yeah, I think especially around the 4th of July holiday, properly, that is a very smart thing to do. Take your pets out earlier in the evening to get them their bathroom breaks. Let's do some walks early or some activities earlier so that we're reducing some of their pent-up energy. Let's utilize some activities inside like bully sticks or other proper chews in order to give them something to occupy. Let's use some white noise, some nice relaxing music inside, and be present with them so that if they do get scared, if they do get startled, you can help to comfort them. You can help to guide them to a more calm space, or just help to refocus their attention on another activity if we can't do anything else to help them. And then certainly looking forward, if you know that your pets can struggle with this, contact your veterinarian well before these types of activities are going to be happening to see if they have any suggestions from a medication standpoint that might be able to help facilitate calmer 4th of July holidays.
Yeah. Dr. Johnson, at the practice where you're working, do you see people coming in to the vet before the holidays to say, hey, is there any kind of anti-anxiety medication I can have on hand for my dog or cat before these fireworks start?
We do. And I would love if the kind of surge of refill requests and initial prescription requests, if that came even sooner. we are lucky to the way we have our practice set up. There's some dedicated pharmacy staff that can kind of field that torrent of please refill my trazodone and gabapentin and various benzos and everything. But it would be even better if we could plant that seed earlier, start thinking about that earlier, because a lot of these medications, there's no one size fits all dosing regimen. We need to see how that individual pet responds to the medications, try and trial different medications and in different combinations, and really establish kind of a custom fit for that pet. And it's really hard to do adequate trial dosing and playing around with that dosing range 2 days before the fireworks hit. Mm-hmm. So we definitely do see an uptick in primary prescription requests and refills right around that holiday. But we try to prompt pet caregivers to think a little bit more proactively. And really at the start of the summer, that's a great time to try and set up for success and really plan.
Yeah, Lisa, Nick mentioned his fancy GPS collar for Gordon, which I do want to ask him more about. But what goes into trying to reunite animals with their families if they don't have these fancy collars that Nick talked about and they show up at the shelter because they've gotten scared?
Sure. So one of the things that we promote most often to our community and with every animal that comes through our doors is microchipping. So it is the fastest way for reunification. Many local police stations, fire stations, of course, vet offices and the shelter all have microchip scanners. So that way, if you do find a pet and you walk the pet around the neighborhood to try and find an owner, you're not successful. You can take the pet down to, if you feel safe, take the pet down to your local station and they can scan the pet for a microchip. We offered 100 free microchips last week to the community and we saw a great turnout. We tell people all the time that's the best way to keep pets out of the shelter is to microchip.
Yeah. Dr. Wells, I want to ask you about that because I know how important microchipping is, but what if you move or you have a different phone number? How difficult is it to update that information if you've microchipped your pet, 10 or 15 years ago?
Yeah, great question. I think the challenge is making sure that you're keeping track of the company who is keeping track of that information. I adopted all of my animals from the shelter and I've been fortunate not to have to move. But if I did, I would have to go search through my email to find, home again and track that information down so that I could update it. But I think Lisa would agree that's probably one of the biggest challenges is that you scan it and they might see where the microchip was implanted. We see that in the veterinary clinic as well, but the owner information is not updated. Mm-hmm. And so that makes it very frustrating because then they can't get in touch with the owner. And I would just, add on to that. It is really helpful, maybe even only for temporary times, to also have some, physical address mm-hmm. identification on the collar. My dog wears a collar all the time, but I know a lot of dogs don't on a regular basis, and cats certainly don't. But at a time like this, if you could do that, that's going to help when they're walking around the neighborhood. They're going to know what house to go to or what phone number to call. So I think having both of those pieces can help reunite the pet more quickly.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We're talking about pets for the full hour today. Our experts are here to answer your questions. Call 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. And we do have a caller on the line. Hi, Ginger. Thanks so much for calling. What's your question?
Hi. I just want to know, I always love to look forward to the pet show because you have the experts with their great advice and pet lover and fellow cat lover, Lucy is host, so I get the best of both worlds.
Well, thank you.
So what I was calling about today was that many years ago, a stray cat, she was very beautiful. She had 6 kittens in my shed, and it was a very cold day, and it was going down to 10 below that night. So I think, well, I'll bring the kittens inside in my home to keep them warm. So while they were in there, I noticed that they were just the sweetest kittens, very gentle, beautiful, very smart. So I decided, well, we'll keep the mother. A sister would keep one of the kittens. I would keep another kitten. And then we found homes for the two little boys. But, you know, it was kitten season, and well, I kept the mother as one of the kittens. So we kept quite a lot of kittens. So what my question, well, see, the trick is don't bring them inside. Once they're in there, they're not going anywhere.
So what was your question about this litter?
So my question is, all the years I've had cats, I've never had like a mother and her four daughters or siblings. But one of my question was, I just noticed the whole time I had these cats, there never was any biting, scratching, yelling at each other, both toward me and toward each other. It was like this little family that they just always got along. And I was wondering, when you have a mother and the siblings together, do they tend to all get along better, or do they just bless with great personalities?
No, great question, Ginger. What do you think, Dr. Johnson? You are our cat behavior expert on the panel today. Was that just a good mama cat keeping those kittens in line, or do they tend to get along better if it's a family?
I think it does come down to genetics, previous experience, luck, the environment around them. I have friends who have not been so lucky with a mother and the babies that they kept. So I really would take it as you have a wonderful little kitty family. I would not assume that if another mom comes into your life that the same outcome would happen. I think sometimes they can trick us into, this will work in the future as well. But we can see familial tension and conflict just as easily as with strange cats, strangers who weren't raised together. So in some cases, it really just comes down to the personalities involved in those individual pets.
Okay. Well, Ginger, it sounds like you lucked out. Thank you so much for calling and for listening. It was great to hear from you. We also got an email from Joelle, who writes, "My cat Gobo and my dog Echo aren't bothered by fireworks, but I wonder if it's safe for them to be outside watching fireworks with me. I don't take them close to fireworks, but there are large and loud fireworks shows in my neighborhood. Is it safe for their ears to be outside?" What do you think, Dr. Wells?
That's a great question. I think I would still be concerned about the startle factor. And, you know, there's other things going on that may startle them besides the fireworks. And so, especially for the cat, I guess, you know, being a cat person myself, I would be a little bit more concerned about the cat's comfort level being outside with a bunch of people and the noise. And so I'd probably allow the cat to watch from inside if possible. Dogs could potentially get along in that situation. You know, the noise is definitely a factor. They do make some, you know, noise-canceling headphones for dogs. I think they've been marketing those around fireworks. Nick may have some things to say about that, too. But I think they certainly can help block that extra noise. But certainly making sure your dog's on a nice, tight leash and comfortable being in a crowd, because just because they're comfortable being outside and they're comfortable watching the fireworks, that might be a little bit of overstimulation.
Yeah. Nick, you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, sure. I always suggest that if clients are going to be bringing your dogs with you to any kinds of events or your pets to any kinds of events, my big suggestion is prioritize their experience and their comfort first and foremost. If you don't want to, can't do that, then let's not bring them, because we want to be able to pivot and make adjustments to help them where we need to. And also having a good understanding of your pet's ability to tolerate versus enjoy experiences, I think, is also really helpful. So if you can look at your dog and be able to understand based on their behavior, their body language, how they are positioning themselves, etc., whether they are enjoying an experience, tolerating an experience, or maybe even subtly trying to remove themselves from an experience. Those are all things that are really important. So simply put, I would usually not be suggesting bringing pets to those types of things unless that is exactly what you're trying to prioritize and focus on, is their experience. If you want to have a good time with friends, with family, or to just watch the fireworks yourself, then I would suggest let them be cozy at home with something happy to keep them occupied, and then go out and enjoy the experience yourself.
Yeah. Well, Nick, I do want to circle back to you about that GPS collar that you got for Gordon, who is the escape artist. are those, how do those work? I mean, can you just get them anywhere? Do you use your cell phone to track the pet if they've gotten away? Do they have them for cats and dogs?
Yeah, so I can speak about the personal experience I've had with the one that I use, which is a Fi collar. And that has it's a very simple-looking collar that my dog wears. It is not overly large. I have to charge it about once a month. And during that time, it will track his walking, his activity. It's supposed to link with my phone. So when I go for a walk with him, it will track our walk. Same for going for a run with him. I find that it works fairly well. It gives me peace of mind, and the monthly subscription isn't too bad for that purpose. They definitely do have options for looking at both dogs and cats, but I don't have a ton of experience utilizing different products.
Sure. It almost sounds like almost like a Fitbit for your dog or something like that.
It kind of is.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we've got a lot more to talk about, and we will be back with our pet show after a short break. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our pet show and a panel of experts to answer your questions. My guests are Westerville Veterinary Clinic veterinarian Dr. Denise Johnson, owner of Paws, Look, Listen, Nick Hoff, Cincinnati Animal Care Senior Manager for Community Engagement, Lisa Kalina, and University of Cincinnati Professor of Veterinary Technology, Dr. Jennifer Wells. You can join the conversation. Call 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. And remember, the advice you hear on this show is general in nature and should not substitute for a visit with your vet. We were talking earlier in the show about fireworks and whether pets get afraid. We had somebody write in and say they aren't bothered by fireworks. Kathy called in and said, "Hey, I thought my pets weren't scared about fireworks, but I was wrong. Don't expose your pets to fireworks." So it sounds like Kathy's saying better safe than sorry. That sounds like what our panel is basically saying too, huh? Okay, well, we were just talking about this pet Fitbit. We've got lots to talk about, but I was reading about these longevity drugs and products and supplements, all these things that are being developed to try to help extend the lives of dogs mostly. That's what I was reading about. Dr. Wells, what do you think about these different drugs and supplements that are being developed and sometimes even marketed already?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an exciting avenue of research. Certainly, Loyal, I believe, is the brand that we looked closely into for some background on this particular topic. And this is actually a product that's looking for FDA approval. So it's not, quote unquote, just a supplement or a food. And it's meant to target the ways that either large dogs that we know, age more quickly than our smaller dogs, the way that they develop so that they do not age as quickly. And maybe we can maybe close the gap a little bit so that our wonderful larger breeds maybe live a little bit longer. But they also have been targeting different metabolic reactions so that, the normal, they called it the sludge that happens as we get older, the normal inflammation and other bodily changes that happen that slow things down and then, turn into cancers and metabolic disease, turn those things off so that you get a longer lifespan, but also a better quality of life, which is also very, very important. And I think anything that we can do to, change the lifespan and especially increase the quality of life for our pets is obviously, a no-brainer. We would all love to have more time with our pets because we don't get that much time with them and looking at our lifespan. But then I think
unless
one of the
parrot.
Yeah, you're right. That's quite a commitment. Yeah. But I think the other thing that, you know, they're very forthcoming about these companies is that this may translate into things that we can use in humans as well. So I think it's really exciting. I think it's interesting that they're going for FDA approval and, you know, whether they have some outcomes in there. They're doing clinical studies right now and whether they have some outcomes that truly show a difference between their placebo and their drugs, I think will be really exciting to see.
Yeah. Nick, is this something you're watching? You have large breed dogs, don't you? Or you have in the past?
Yes, I have had 7 St. Bernards. And so, yes, this is something that I am certainly going to be keeping my eyes and ears on, although I'm going to wait and see how it goes, look for the evidence, look to make sure that it is improving that quality of life. And in the meantime, I'm just going to continue promoting the same active, healthy lifestyle for my dogs and for any of my clients' dogs.
Yeah. What does that consist of, an active, healthy lifestyle?
I mean, I think that that's absolutely going to vary for every individual dog and person. So if I look at my current dog and my last dog, my current dog, Gordon, and I, we usually go for anywhere from 2 to 4 walks a day that are just for 10 or 15 minutes, nice, short little walks. And I think that that's a really nice, just approachable amount of exercise. My last dog, Fezzik, we would do maybe about 3 to 4 walks a year. He hated going for walks. He loved going on outings. And if we went to a store to walk around, he was a big fan of that because he just wanted to say hi to people. But just walking for walking's sake was not for him. So I found activities and things that he liked and that he wanted to do. And so I think that it's about figuring out what are the types of activities that your dog enjoys, what are the types of activities that you enjoy, and is there a way that we can marry those two together?
Yeah. Dr. Johnson, I want to loop cats into this longevity conversation because I think you told me a while back there's research underway to extend cats' lives too, isn't there?
There's always the hope and the attempt. Some of the medications, so we have a relatively newer cardiac medication, Felicin, that has some promise also just generally for longevity in cats. But I think one of the big limitations that we look at anytime we're trying to study this is to get a really good controlled trial and to get FDA approval. That's a very long trial if we're shooting for longevity. So we may be not able to necessarily apply the things that we're talking about now to our current pets. I think of this as, well, my kids' pets will get the full benefit of all of this research because just to have that good information and study for longevity takes so gosh darn long. But I like to look at what I can functionally do to catch illness early. What can I do to support nutritional health now? And I'm that person where if I see a trailer that looks too exciting, I don't watch it and I wait for the movie to come out. I try not to get too excited about the very far off things and focus a little bit more on what's available right now. What can I do right now in terms of supporting current health and really proactive care?
Yeah. So, Dr. Johnson, what's the most important thing to do to support current health and proactive care? Is it those checkups with your pets and paying attention to their behaviors and, you know, diets and that sort of thing?
I'm a big, annoying proselytizer about having an established relationship with your primary veterinary care provider. And if you can, seeing that same provider year to year, so that they get to know your pet's normal and that they can talk about what kind of a diagnostic profile is right for your pet. There are some pets where we really should be running blood work on an every 6-month basis, or in some cases every 3 months if they have a current medical condition. There's others where we don't need to be quite so on top of looking at every little biochemical marker, but talking about that with your provider about what makes sense for the level of scrutiny that your pet receives and what we can kind of fine tune and make a proactive health plan that works for them as an individual. That's really the key in my opinion.
Yeah.
Also fish oil. Pretty much anybody should be on fish oil.
Dr. Wells, what do you think is the driving force behind this effort to extend our pets' lives? Is this for our pets? Is this for us? I mean, are there like ethical questions? I mean, for our pets, there's a lifespan that's kind of there. What are the questions that you think about along those lines?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's natural for us to want to extend the lives of our companions. We get a lot of, we've talked about this on past shows, we get a lot of physical benefits and emotional benefits from having our pets with us. And it can be very draining and emotionally difficult when our pets get sick and then pass away. And so the longer that we can have them with us, I think we're always going to be looking for that. And again, I second everything Dr. Johnson said about, taking care of your animals while they're here and preventing those diseases as much as you can. I think that the challenge comes that, we do sometimes in veterinary medicine see times where an animal is saying goodbye and they can't, they're not comfortable anymore and they're not able to have their normal functions anymore. And they're, what I would call as a veterinarian suffering. And I think it can be really difficult for an owner sometimes to be able to come to that decision where it may be in the animal's best interest to let them go at that point. And I might start crying because I just had to do that for one of my cats. Oh, he was only 9 years old. It was terrible, but he was suffering. He had cancer and it's not fair. And he didn't live to be 18 like the rest of my cats, but it was the right thing to do. And, I delayed it as long as I possibly could and kept him on every medication I could try. But it just, we have to give them the best lives we can. Speaking of quality of life, like we were talking about before, we, I think, are blessed in our profession in that we can give them quality of life. It doesn't always have to be the quantity, which we sometimes do in humans. And it is, I think, a blessing to be able to not force them to go through those last several days or weeks of torture, I think, sometimes that happens in humans.
Yeah.
So that was a very depressing note. I'm sorry.
No. That's very, very rude. But necessary information.
Yeah, absolutely.
My 17-year-old cat had to go through a procedure recently, and this was the first procedure where when selecting to do CPR versus DNR, we had to go with DNR because that was just the right decision for a 17-year-old cat with more comorbidities than I can list, and it sucks.
Yeah,
it's really important to weigh those decisions. And I just want to kind of put that out there. We as veterinary professionals have to go through that same thing. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
So Nick, really that balance.
We need to come up with a better, happier question next.
Right. Yes. Yes. Changing topics.
Yes. It's that balancing act. Of course you want your beloved pet around forever, but you need to do what's right for them. Huh, Nick?
Absolutely. And I think that is a very challenging place that many, if not almost all of us, have been in at different points. I've been doing this for a number of years. I get very close with my clients, and I help them navigate all manner of these types of decisions. And I bring to them both my personal experiences, things that I am happy I did, things I wish I had done differently, so that they can just know that someone else understands it and is going to be there to support them when they make whatever decision they choose to make. But yeah, I think that paying attention to that quality of life aspect and figuring out what does your animal enjoy doing on a daily, on a weekly basis. And if there is question of not being able for them to do those activities in the ways that we know that they would like, we can use that to help inform various decisions that we need to make.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Johnson, this might not sound like a happy question, but I do think it's a happier question. I, doing homework for this discussion, I read that some cat cancers are similar to human cancers and that there's all this research going on to develop feline cancer treatments. I guess I wonder what you've been following with that and whether you think that could lead to better cancer treatments for humans too.
Oh boy, how do I pep this one up? So I do think that the more kind of cross-disciplinary research that we can do, the better. There's a lot of benefits to using the information that we have from either side for the other. Just as an example of, you know, just revolutionary benefit is after COVID, with all of these antivirals being researched and developed and implemented, we were able to go from FIP, feline infectious peritonitis, this awful, horrible illness that when I graduated, it was a literal death sentence. It wasn't a matter of if you euthanized, it was when do you want to? And now we have multiple treatment protocols that we've benefited from kind of taking those medications from human medicine. So I think that there's certainly the opportunity for the reverse in terms of we can hopefully take some information from our veterinary patients and information and apply that to human health. There's an overall initiative called One Health, which is basically, we're all mammals, you know, and we can probably involve some exotic vets in there too, but there's definitely kind of hope and opportunity. I don't have any kind of particular studies that I'm currently keeping an eye on. My current interest snooping on is the application of GLP-1s for cats. Because right now I'm much more focused on what we can steal from human medicine for our feline patients. But definitely that sharing of information is so beneficial to both sides.
Yeah. Well, we are talking about pets for the full hour today, and we've got experts here to answer your questions. Call 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. We're going to take another quick break. We'll be back to wrap up our pet show after that. If you've got questions, now's the time to call. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our pet show and experts to answer your questions about your furry friends. My guests are owner of Paws, Look, Listen, Nick Hoff, Cincinnati Animal Care Senior Manager for Community Engagement, Lisa Kalina, University of Cincinnati Professor of Veterinary Technology, Dr. Jennifer Wells, and Westerville Veterinary Clinic Veterinarian, Dr. Denise Johnson. If you've got questions, call 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. And keep in mind, the advice you hear on the program is general in nature and should not substitute for a visit with your vet. We do have a caller on the line. Hey, Marjorie, thanks so much for listening and calling. What's your question?
Well, I actually have a comment that we were able to teach our cat to walk with a harness collar and a leash. He was a stray that moved in, and he was notorious. He would go out, and because we're in a neighborhood, unfortunately, where people used to let their cats out, and he would just pick fights. So he was constantly at the vets for antibiotics, and it was getting too expensive. So that was the alternative.
And he did well with it?
Yes, yes. You know, a good number of years. You just had to get used to standing because he wouldn't trot down the street like a dog.
You'd take him for a stand, not a walk, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A stand and stare.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Marjorie. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
He'd pretty much do a half to almost the whole block, and he knew the neighbor that used to feed him tins of tuna. We'd head to that when he saw her.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much. What a great story. Appreciate your listening and calling in. Nick, how tough is that to train a cat to walk like Marjorie did?
It can definitely be a little bit challenging with our cats. Any type of training or desensitizing, we want to just kind of gradually do it. But I think that's a really smart opportunity that instead of kind of trying to keep a cat indoors and stop them from escaping, if we can provide an appropriate outlet for them to get that enrichment, I think that that is a much better alternative. I actually have a catio set up on my house for my cat so that he can get some outdoor time safely.
Yeah, life goals. I really want a catio. I hope my husband's listening. Okay. We have another caller on the line. Hi, Paula. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hi there. We have an 8-year-old tortoiseshell that we had rescued when she was a baby. And recently, every now and then in the past, she would kind of bite. Recently, that seems to be getting more frequent. Like I'll be sitting and reading, and all of a sudden she just chomps on my arm. Or my partner will be at a computer, and she'll just go in there and out of the blue, bite her on the leg. And, you know, I'm not sure how to rectify it, and two, what might be causing this.
I'm going to ask you about that, Dr. Johnson, as our cat person, our cat specialist on the line.
Yeah, so it's important information, kind of what that body language looks like at the time, which can be really tricky when you're having a cat that's just kind of sneaking up on you to do it. I do love, in this new age of technology, setting up video surveillance in kind of the key areas where the unwanted behavior is occurring, just that we can get a little kind of step back and look at what is going on before that behavior happens, what is contributing to the motivation for that behavior, what does she look like when she is about to act on it, when she acts on it, and afterwards. Because the biting itself, sometimes that can be an expression of frustration. Sometimes that can be a way to get attention. It certainly would get my attention if somebody snuck up and bit me. And depending on what that looks like, we address it in different ways. So we generally avoid punishment in cats because we can end up increasing stress, increasing frustration. So we don't necessarily want to try and punish a bite, especially because that can turn into a full-on altercation, which is never recommended. But if this is a communication issue of, I've learned that I get attention when I bite, we can do things like teach a high five, teach sitting pretty, or teaching her to meow on cue. And then often they'll generalize that and they'll do that. So one of my cats, he would just scream and scream when he wanted my attention, and I didn't love that. So we taught him to high five, and now he just comes up and delicately pokes me, which is so much better than the screams, and presumptively would also be better than being bitten. But really, all this kind of starts with, why are we doing this? Getting information on the body language, ideally getting a veterinary exam to make sure there's not a source of discomfort that may be contributing to frustration, lack of patience, things like that. And really, again, video surveillance is such a great tool when we're trying to address things like this.
Yeah. Nick, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think that all of that sounds really, really good. And after kind of running through that, one option that I find to be helpful in some situations when we're trying to replace a problem behavior with perhaps a new one is identifying something that's really clear and desirable. So I have strategically placed cat trees in almost each of my rooms that I hang out with my cat. And so I often like to teach him to go to those spots if he wants my attention. And so instead of coming over to me and nuzzling me or nipping at me, I encourage him to go to his cat trees. And when he goes to his cat tree, I will usually acknowledge him. I will usually engage with him. And so he has a much more polite way to ask for my attention in those situations.
Oh. Well, Paula, I hope that helps. And I hope your little tortie gets her act together. We appreciate your listening. We have Terry on the line. Hi, Terry.
Hi. I have a question about my cat, please.
Okay.
My cat gets extremely car sick when we go to the vet. His respiratory rate almost doubles. He makes so much saliva. The bedding is wet. He's been incontinent. And he pants. Our vet has ordered, we feel terrible about it, but our vet has ordered medication in the past, but it definitely was not effective. I know the vets there can't prescribe for my cat, but I'm wondering if they would have any type of recommendation.
Dr. Wells, do you have any thoughts on that?
I you know, hesitate to guess just because I'm not sure what medications were tried, but there are definitely multiple different types of medications. And, you know, it may be that they didn't respond to one and they may respond to another. You know, this is certainly probably related to stress and fear, you know, being in the car. So, you know, Nick is probably going to chime in, you know, with some, you know, desensitizing sort of actions there as well. I wonder if Dr. Johnson may have some other ideas also. But, you know, I think it's just a real overreaction to anxiety and fear.
Yeah. Dr. Johnson, before
you. Thank you.
Yeah.
If just a single medication was used previously, if it was well tolerated but not sufficient, then I would probably look at what kind of cocktail could be put together. The tough thing is there's not really a labeled FDA proven, this is the thing that you give cats with car sickness. We have labeled drugs for dogs with car sickness. So as vets, we have the power to prescribe things that are not on label, but as soon as we are in off-label territory, it becomes really a personal conversation with your primary provider or prescriber. So that's something where I would talk to them about, can we do a combination of anti-nausea medications? Can we combine that with a situational anti-anxiety medication or something if we don't necessarily want to reach for a full psychopharmaceutical, can we do a supplement that reduces anxiety combined with one or more anti-nausea medications and really kind of troubleshoot what that looks like? I don't want to ramble off medication names, but that is something where I would just make it really clear to your veterinarian, this pet needs more support. I'm interested in getting more support and kind of reaching out to resources. And in terms of sometimes you can have them contact somebody who's just generally interested in behavior like me, or, or if they have a preferred like internal medicine person, or there's also a veterinary behaviorist who is offering remote telemedicine. Gigi's is the kind of base facility where she's working out of, Dr. Shana Gilbert Gregory, and she's fantastic. So that would be another consideration. There's a lot of different options, a lot of different approaches. So really just knowing your resources and trial and error, unfortunately.
Okay.
But I would agree that a combination of, there's probably anxiety and motion sickness together.
Yeah. Nick, did you want to add some behavioral ideas?
Yeah, I can add a couple of just quick thoughts in addition to all of that. So a product that may be helpful to supplement in those cases would be Feel-Away. That is a synthetic pheromone that can help to reduce stress and anxiety in our cats. There is, I believe with Feel-Away, I think you can get like a little wipe that you could wipe around on the inside of your cat's carrier so that a few minutes before you're putting them in, you can kind of put that in and that can help to reduce their stress. And then from a desensitization training perspective, when we are nowhere near time for a vet appointment, like 6 months before we need to start working on this, let's begin taking our cat out into the car, just hanging out with them for a moment, giving them some scritches while the vehicle's turned off. Then we go back inside and that was it. Next time we do that again for a little longer, maybe we're going to start the car, but then we're just going to go back inside. We're going to pull down the driveway, go down the street, but then we're just coming back home. So these are ways that we can much more gradually introduce some of the stressors in much more digestible doses.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Thank you also. Terry, best of luck with your cat there. I hope that helps, and I hope your next vet visit isn't as traumatic. That's a tough one. Lisa, I want to come back to you because we started off talking about how crazy busy the summer holidays and 4th of July and these thunderstorms and everything make the shelter. Cincinnati Animal Care is designated as a no-kill shelter. Talk to us about what that means and what, just briefly, what some of the challenges are of operating a shelter like that.
So, sure. Cincinnati Animal Care is the Hamilton County Animal Shelter. We did take over the contract for animal services back in 2020, and overnight, literally, we became a no-kill shelter. So for the first time in Hamilton County, just 6 years ago is when this all began. The no-kill movement is saving every savable animal. Of course, that is challenging in an environment where, you know, we are contracted by Hamilton County to take in all stray animals. And we also take in all cases of suspected neglect, abuse, and cruelty. So last year, we saw about 8,500 animals come through our door that are our community's animals. And we firmly believe that animal sheltering is a community ethic and has a community solution. It's very grassroots. It's not a spectator sport, as our shelter director often says. You have to get in, you have to help. So to alleviate the issues that shelters of the past were having with space, we really encourage some of our programming, like our foster program. You know, fostering is the future of animal sheltering. Right now, we look at about 45% of our population is in foster homes, which is great. But during these times of year, you know, when we have the high intake month ahead of us, it does become challenging. It really stretches our resources very thin. So no kill means maintaining more than a 90% live release rate. We have maintained that since day one, but it has not been because of just our efforts. It is because our community is so involved with what we do, and we're so grateful for them. And we're always looking for more fosters and volunteers, donors, and of course, adopters.
Yeah. And is the shelter adequately funded? Do you have the money that you need to do everything you have to do?
So we are funded by Hamilton County for the first 72 hours of care for the stray dogs. That does not account for owner surrenders or any other circumstances. Our average length of stay is about five times that. Mm. So as you can imagine, it is up to us to fundraise to kind of bridge that gap. Right now, we're looking at about 83 cents of every dollar that we have goes toward our programming. So that's a pretty significant amount. But that is generally from fundraising efforts. We threw our very first large-scale signature fundraiser last year. You know, as a young startup organization, this isn't something that we just had. So we had to really kind of build it from the ground up, as well as really building out our community engagement programs to help with funding and, you know, brand awareness for who we are and what we do. We also feel that one of the best ways to keep pets out of the shelter is to keep people and pets together by providing resources and services to people. We offer a low-cost vaccine clinic. We've just opened up community vet appointments on the second and fourth Wednesdays of the month, where our veterinarian will see some cases from our community of people who don't want to lose their pets and love their pets dearly, but may be in a position of not being able to afford the vet care. So those types of programming, those kinds of things that we have implemented in the past 6 years since we've become the Hamilton County Animal Shelter, help us to achieve that no-kill status. And no-kill does not necessarily mean no euthanasia. It does not mean no euthanasia, but it is not something that we would kill for space. It is not something that euthanasia happens for space.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you all so much. This has been a terrific conversation. I've been talking with Cincinnati Animal Care Senior Manager for Community Engagement, Lisa Kalina, University of Cincinnati Professor of Veterinary Technology, Dr. Jennifer Wells, Westerville Veterinary Clinic Veterinarian, Dr. Denise Johnson, and owner of Pause, Look, Listen, Nick Hoff. Thank you all so much for your time today and for sharing your expertise.
Thank you as always.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Her son, Dorian, was her helper today. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May.